This Week Today, Fridays, 6 to 7 p.m.
A very good evening to you. You're tuned in to This Week Today with me, Zai Khan, standing in for Oliver Dixon. And as we breathe in the spirit of Ubuntu, we delve deep into stories shaping our continent, from the echoes of Human Rights Day to the pulsating heartbeats of World Water Day, right here on Channel 814. That's on your DSTV bouquet. You could feel free to join the conversation. Call us on 086-000-2032 or text us at 41391. Standard rates apply. And let's not forget our WhatsApp line, 061-410-4107. Engage with us on Twitter at SAFM Radio. We're leading the conversation. So let's get started. Tonight on This Week Today, we'll turn the pages on our history to a chapter that remains vivid in our collective memory. Human Rights Day 2024 was on Thursday, a day that echoed the courage, the pain, as well as, you know, things that we would hopefully look forward to. And we'll talk to some renowned journalists as well and tell you what's happening. And well, I can tell you one thing is that this show is going to be full of surprises. Let's not forget what's happening in Russia. We've had the Russian elections, Vladimir Putin in power again. So yeah, we'll talk about the price of freedom and the power of truth. So definitely joining us to delve into the depths of this significant day will be Terry Bell, a name synonymous with fearless journalism and insightful commentary on our political and economic landscape. So you have so much to look forward to, as always, here on SAFM. So very excited, as always, to bring you the show. It's Zai Khan, by the way, standing in for Oliver Dixon. I'm usually on the sporting desk, but today we're going to dive straight in on Human Rights Day 2024. Welcome, Terry Bell. Great having you on the show as we reflect on the historic events of Sharpeville. How would you say the role of the media has evolved in South Africa's democracy since those days?
Hello.
Hi. Hi, Terry. Can you hear us?
Hi. Yes, I can hear you now.
Yes. Fine. So we want to talk about this historic events of Sharpeville and how you say the role of the media has evolved in South Africa's democracy since those days.
Well, it hasn't evolved really that much, right? Not just here, but globally. The journalism has been run down all around the world, and we have more people working now as spin doctors than as journalists, and that's one of the big dangers. So, for example, we have a situation where I'm getting a lot of feedback here. Where, for example, we have a fact of the shootings at Sharpeville. The official figure of dead was given was 69 people were killed and about 180 wounded. But in fact, it turns out two American academics, historians, came here and discovered all the police files. And in fact, it emerges that more than 91 people died and probably 238 or more were wounded, some of them crippled for life.
Sure.
I've got terrible feedback.
Well, we can hear you clearly, though, Doctor.
Okay.
So, I mean, if you're talking about media integrity, what are some of the myths that you feel needs to be dispelled, especially with the incident in Sharpeville?
Well, the point is, you see, there are so many myths. There's so much fake news around at the moment, especially with now the advent of social media in the last decade or more. We now have all sorts of people just sort of putting news out there. And where do you find reliable reportage? Where do you find reliable news that you can actually rely on? You can say these are facts based on evidence, not just some sort of supposition. You even find it with the the news agencies. I read two reports over the past week, one from Bloomberg and one from Reuters, both reputable news agencies published in our local newspapers, the reputable newspapers, which referred, for example, to October the 7th last year in Gaza, and said that in a Hamas attack on October the 7th, 1,200 Israelis had been killed. Well, it's completely untrue, quite apart from the figure. The figure's not that important. It's probably 1,136. But they were not Israelis. There were foreign travelers there. There were many Palestinians who had flocked out of Gaza when the border fences came down. And it was the Al-Qassim Brigades, a military wing that supports Hamas, that had come in. That, again, is another factor that should have been carried to give people a proper context. At the same time, one needed a historic context of why there was so much bitterness. And then, of course, it is now admitted that many of the people, we don't know how many, it could have been a minority, it could have been a majority, we don't know, people were killed by helicopter gunships of the Israeli Defense Force who were firing at anything that moved on the ground, and that included Palestinians, Israelis, foreigners, whatever. So people were incinerated by Hellfire missiles as well. So what we need is not to take sides, not to weaponize a particular aspect of a report, but to give the actual facts and at the same time put it in the correct context. And that is what real responsible journalism should do and does. And unfortunately, we're having less and less of that today because as media are being run down, as the economic crisis bites, as we have more artificial intelligence being used with ChatGPT, etc., we are having all sorts of, well, fake and phony news floating around. What we need are really good factual reports.
You know, factual reports is something that there isn't a body, you know, that is managing it, is watching it, is overseeing it. When you say factual reporting, and you mentioned Gaza and what happened on October 7th, where do you think this starts? How do we get this right? Because you can see it has been manipulated with AI and spin doctors, the PR machines out there.
Well, in the first place, we need to train journalists properly. Journalism is much more a vocation, I think, than a job. It's an incredible responsibility because a journalist, if they're operating correctly, any journalist is the eyes and ears of the public at large. You don't serve any one or other faction, and you have to be careful not to let your own prejudices ever intrude. You have to challenge your own prejudices all the time. It's a matter of being properly trained and then having the media outlets. Now, that is gradually shrinking as well. And what we really need is to try to find some way, and there's a move towards it now. The South African National Editors Forum is one of the groups, some of the international journalist organizations who are saying, look, we need to have, for example, on Twitter, what's now called X and whatnot, and Facebook, etc., on the various channels, TikTok, whatever, you're able to have something which verifies this is a factual representation, this is a factual report, or anyone who complains about it, they then get taken off or have been told they're phony. There must be some way of regulating, but at the same time, not giving any state total power to decide suddenly what should be broadcast. It's a very difficult situation, but it's a situation we have to face now.
I mean, you're talking about the evolution of media, not just South African media, but how should young journalists then approach reporting on sensitive political issues?
Well, if you report on political issues, I mean, what you do is you report honestly and openly and you put it in context. You do not, for example, allow a politician to make a statement which is grossly untrue and not challenge it. You have to, as a journalist, you should ask and say, but just a moment, two years ago or a week ago, you said a completely different thing. How do you reconcile them? You have to ask the right questions. It's much more important. It's not the answers or the reporting of what people say or do that matters. It's a matter of giving the context and the whole background to it, and asking the right questions of those who should have answers.
Let's bring it back to the Sharpeville massacre. We were honoring the day on Thursday, a pivotal moment in our history. Do you think this event has shaped modern South Africa political as well as our social landscapes?
Sorry, I didn't catch that.
The Sharpeville massacre was quite a moment in our history. And how do you think this event has shaped modern South Africa's political and social landscapes?
Well, it shaped more than South Africa's political landscape. It shaped the international perception of South Africa. It was the one event, and that's because there was a journalist present, and most importantly, a photographer, Ian Berry, who's now 89 years old and lives in London, who happened to be there and who carried the report, which people initially media wouldn't carry, but were able to show this. The world saw this and was horrified. It gave the huge boost to an international anti-apartheid movement. And that was a watershed moment for South Africa. It also had a fantastic resonance within the country. People heard about it, saw it. Drum Magazine were the ones who promoted it. And people on the ground therefore felt this is a regime we have to resist. So I would say it was a watershed moment, and it is one that has to be acknowledged. But also we have to look at the history of it. Who was behind it? You know, now that we have a new election looming with a whole host of new parties. For example, it was a brand new, virtually brand new party that launched the protest that ended in the massacre at Sharpeville. And that was the Pan-Africanist Congress. It was only 11 months old when Robert Mangaliso Sobukwe called for this protest. He said, look, we just go and we hand in our passes, or we just say to the police, we have no passes, arrest us. And the police did, in fact, arrest. And when people went to Sharpeville, because that was where they were well organized, there were about 3,000 people there, and they simply went to protest. It was a bit of a carnival atmosphere, as Humphrey Tyler, the reporter from Drum, he was actually the assistant editor, who just went there because he was curious, and the police started opening fire. And they, according to the police records that have now been dug out, and this is where our historians have been remiss, it wasn't journalists. These records, because the apartheid regime were very bureaucratic, they did witness statements, they did everything, and these files have been sitting there collecting dust in the police archives until these two American academics came and found them. Witness statements, police statements, the fact that the police decided to open fire to teach them a lesson. I mean, this is the sort of thing that we need to know about. We need to know our history in order to know how we got to where we are, in order to be able to plan for the future.
Absolutely. And the fact that you mentioned this incident had a huge impact globally. How do you see the role of international media in influencing domestic affairs and human rights here in South Africa?
Well, international media, obviously, all media has some sort of influence. I think it's sometimes exaggerated, and a lot of politicians seem to think that the media can swing elections. If that were the case, most dictatorial states wouldn't have existed. For example, take the great Russian Revolution of 1917. Every single newspaper was banned apart from the official state media, and yet you had a revolution. A similar thing has happened in other countries. So it's people's everyday experience that matters, and the organization on the ground of people themselves within civil society. That's what really matters. The media does play a role. International media, well, plays a role now because we actually live in one world. This is really a world village. We are here seeing, hearing what's happening all over the show. What really is worrying is that we tend to focus on one narrow area, say, for example, Ukraine, then it's Gaza. What is happening in Sudan? What is happening in Uzbekistan? What is happening in northern, in the Sahel, or in northern Mozambique? You know, there are 43 armed conflicts on the go in the world at the moment. We need to have them covered. We need to know what is going on, all of us do, in order to be able to decide, what do we do about this? Do we want to carry on in this lunatic way, or do we want to stop it? And in which case, how?
That's an interesting point you make, because a lot of the battles that are being waged, Ukraine, for example, has now been put in, not on the back burner, but it seems like the Israeli-Gaza conflict has been at the forefront, and yet the other regions, the DR Congo, the Sahel, not much reporting. What do you attribute that to, though?
Well, because it's such an important one in terms of the involvement of the major powers. That's what's happening in Gaza, but and the whole Eastern Mediterranean, the whole region from Lebanon as well. The point here is that it also highlights all the problems that actually exist in terms of modern-day colonialism, the idea of settlers moving in, of ethnic cleansing. Everything is summed up and highlighted in what is happening in that particular region. So we can actually transpose some of that, for example, to what's happening in Sudan. What is happening there, where you have two competing military formations, one of which was actually established by the original government, the Janjaweed, which worked on a racial basis, calling themselves Arab, Black Africans, although they're both of the same religion. They're both sides were Muslim, and both sides are Muslim now, who are fighting one another. These are complex issues, but they're issues that we should look at the complexity, we should understand it, in order to avoid it happening again. Or do we want to continue with this lunatic bloodshed? I mean, we really have to try to understand and decide what position we ourselves, each individual, get together in your community, discuss these issues, and then decide if there's something you can do something about it, do something about it.
Absolutely. And in the context of the current global movements for equality, what lessons can the world learn from Sharpeville and South Africa's struggle against apartheid?
Well, the world learned a lot of lessons about the struggle against apartheid.
Okay, we've lost our speaker there, Terry Bell, and our conversation was regarding how the undeniable spirit of our people in Sharpeville, and remembering the price of freedom and the power of truth. And Terry Bell, who's a name synonymous with fearless journalism and insightful commentary on our political and economic landscape, giving his views. And you can see that, you know, he definitely echoes the courage, the pain, and the undeniable spirit of people in Sharpeville, as well as mentioning, you know, Gaza and all the areas that are in conflict, and the importance of journalistic integrity, because that is important, because you can see a man like Terry who has insights and experience and has gone through, you know, dedicated his life to truthful journalism and to human rights. So I think that will always continue to inspire. It'll always continue to continue the conversation here on SAFM. So we appreciate you joining us here on this day, this week. And of course, we'll look at the day and week, as well as reflecting on what the spirit of Ubuntu is, delving into stories shaping our continent. We'll take a quick break and we'll be back right after this. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll just cut off towards the last two questions that we had for Terry, you're back with us. So we were talking about the lessons the world can learn from Sharpeville and South Africa's struggle against apartheid.
Well, I don't think the world has learned an awful lot. If we look at what's happening now around the world, and particularly in Gaza, I don't think that anything has been learned. We have now exactly the same problems, only perhaps on a much larger and more brutal scale than ever before. And that is the worrying factor. And this is why I keep saying we have to learn from our history. We have to look back and say, look what happened. Out of Sharpeville grew a resistance, and that resistance finally ended up with the apartheid regime beginning to crumble and deciding they could no longer control. So they therefore did a deal. And we did a deal, and we ended up with what we call a democracy. And everyone said, oh, that's wonderful. We've done it. We've done peace. We've done it all peacefully, etc. But have we really? How far have we come? Could we not have done that much better? We have to know our history. And we also have to look at the rest of the world and say, look, did they learn anything? Did we learn anything? Instead, we go around, don't forget, the United States, Britain, etc., called the ANC and the PAC, the liberation movements, were known as terrorist organizations. Now, any group that is resisting colonization, or for example, within the Palestinian circumstances, the various Palestinian organizations are also called terrorists. But who's the terrorist? Is it not terror to drop two-ton bombs on residential areas? That, to my mind, is terror. You can go back to World War II and the firebombing of Dresden. These are all things we have to look at, and that's where journalism comes in. Journalism puts things in a historical context, or should try to, reports exactly the facts of what is happening as accurately as possible, so that we ordinary people can identify with what is going on, not get confused by it, not get completely bamboozled by a lot of spin that is spun at us by politicians and their paid-for propagandists. No, rely on proper factual journalism in order to make proper, sensible decisions. And I actually believe that the majority of people, given the facts, the clear facts, will decide, by and large, to pursue a course which is collective, responsible, and peaceful.
Oh, Terry, that was powerful. So we're going to conclude, but if you could have a cup of coffee with any figure from South African history, who would it be and why?
Oof, tremendous thing. And just because I've been reading so much lately about the very recent history, and also because of Sharpeville, I would very much like to have met, and like Humphrey Tyler managed to, have had tea or coffee with Mangalisa Sobukwe.
Oh, that is another powerful way to end this. Telling you, Terry, I really appreciate that you have such incredible insights for us, and your experiences definitely shaping journalism and the way forward.
Thank you very much. All the very best to you.
There we go. Terry Bell talking about human rights and his dedication to truthful journalism as well as human rights. And I hope that continues to inspire, whether you are thinking about becoming a journalist, you are a journalist, or even a seasoned journalist. You know, let the truth prevail.